Welcome back to Arts About, everybody.
Morning, Sally, Comrade Sally. And this is a show about art, Sally, that's a work of art in itself.
It most certainly is, John. It most certainly is.
Is that your political entourage I can see out the...
It is. We have Will Bailey here in the studio with us this morning.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to be in. Yeah, the star's back on the door.
Yes, you noticed that. Yep, I didn't think that you'd actually had a look.
In the dressing room, that's very nice. Thank you, Brody.
That's good. Now, Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. So what disruption do you think you're going to include today in the show, Will?
Well, today is going to be a little breakthrough in RPP radio.
And is it now?
It's a little surprise for everyone. I think we're going to have a little breakthrough section that may become a regular part of our show.
Okay,
so we'll introduce
fantastic.
That later.
Can't wait.
Sounds exciting.
And John, what do you have for us this week?
Oh, I want to talk about Christo.
Christo,
I'll just
really?
Leave it at that.
That's all. We don't. Yeah, we know what you mean. Of course, that's fantastic. Now, apparently, Cliff is sick today, so he's not going to be in. But I'm not sure that that means we're going to leave him out of the show.
No.
I think we might ring him up. What do you think?
Okay. Well, he can speak from his bed in his dressing gown.
Yeah. Just imagine Cliff in his dressing gown, everybody. Fantastic. Now, the show is bound to tend a little to the political. Just because I am, after all, a candidate for Dunkley for the House of Reps in fighting for the Arts Party. So I thought we'd play a programme today that Gabe and Dr. Gabe, I should say, and Will did last year sometime, which intersects art and politics in a discussion that you two had about some prime ministerial portraits hanging in Parliament House.
Oh, controversial. Yeah.
Hi, Will. How are you? I believe you've been to the citadel of our democracy recently.
I have, and thank you very much for calling in this time to my office, which, as you can see, is a little tighter than yours. There's a lot of good stuff in here. But yes, I have been to the citadel of our democracy on a trip to Canberra.
Fantastic.
You know Canberra, I think, don't you? Have you been there before?
I love Canberra. I'm one of the only people that really, really loves Canberra.
Well, that's what I've heard. I haven't been to Canberra since the old Parliament House was in operation, and I went into the new one. What were they thinking there?
Well, may you say God save the Queen, but I don't know who's going to save new Parliament House.
Well, I don't know who's going to save the new Parliament House either. I mean, I thought I was in the Parliament House when I took... I've got a digitised library, I just thought to explain. That's why there's no... books on the shelves, just lots of, what do they call them? Zip discs,
yep.
floppy discs everywhere I've got here. This is my first shot that I took in Canberra, arriving in the Great Hall, which I then found out was not the Great Hall itself. It's the car park.
Indeed.
Was that a surprise to you, coming in and seeing all that concrete?
I'd just like to welcome all the terrorists out there to perhaps pack a small bomb into the boot of your car, because you can drive straight under the damn building and you can annihilate it on behalf of us all.
Well,
it's a shocker.
It is a shocker. And see the big round concrete columns that have been formed by rather cheap tubes at the time. They run right up into the Parliament itself. But the difference up top is they're the same columns, but they've got this veneer of marble.
It looks like them. It looks like the Park Hyatt in the city.
The Park Hyatt, yeah, I haven't been there. It's a cross between that and the Palazzo Versace.
Yes.
But it's very cheaply done. It's cost $1.5 billion, but it looks cheap. That's the main thing. Anyway, look, I don't want to go on about that.
And I don't want you to bang on about it too much, because at the end of the day, the building does house a really beautiful collection of prime ministerial portraits that do have a legitimate claim to our respect.
Well, the prime ministerial portraits were fantastic, and we enjoyed going to there. It was interesting that the kids, teenage kids these days, their folk hero, the one they wanted to be photographed with, was the portrait of John Howard.
Oh, God. I'll tell you what, there's no shortage of nuts amongst the 28 prime ministers that we've had so far. Some of them have been good drinkers, some of them have been bad swimmers, and some of them have been unlikely heroes.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to tell me a little bit about some of them. My own favourite, of course, was the portrait of John Gorton. He's my man, but we can talk about him in a minute.
I quite like Alfred Deakin, considering he apparently received instructions from the ghosts of Sophocles and John Stuart Mill during his term in the in the seat. But I don't want to talk about him because I don't think his portrait's particularly interesting. But I'd like to show you this one first, Will, which is a portrait of our 15th Prime Minister, Sir Earl Christmas Grafton Page. There's a name.
That's a name. Is that who was Grafton named?
It was indeed. And
what about Christmas?
Yeah, no, I think Christmas may have been there before him. But he didn't sit in the chair for too long. In fact, it was only 18 days that he sat in the big chair after Lyon's death. But he was a popular chap, and apparently one of his great talents was his ability to pick Melbourne Cup winners. You can see him here in this image, and we'll put it on our Facebook page for our listeners.
Do you remember Paul the Octopus at the World Cup? Picking the winners?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think he might have... This old Earl Page may have been...
based on Earl Page.
The octopi of the time. This chap, I love this portrait, Will. And what I love about it is it is such a benevolent face that looks out at you. I might add that we'd really like to enlist the help of our listeners because we actually don't know who painted this portrait. I haven't been able to discover in my research who the genius is that painted this gorgeous portrait of Earl Page in his academic robes. He was one of 11 children, precursor to men's. He was the chap who introduced Australia's first national health scheme, and unfortunately, he died at 81 a few hours before the announcement of his defeat in Parliament.
We can have a competition amongst our listeners. Perhaps they could get a copy of our almanac that's coming out before Christmas if they can provide us with the name of the artist for that particular portrait. Well, who have we got next?
The next one I wanted to chatter about was Frank Ford. Now, he's our 19th Prime Minister. He was only 8 days in the job, which wasn't a long time, clearly. And he lost the leadership ballot to Curtin by one vote, which was a bit of a shame, so he didn't get to enjoy the spot for very long. He was a Labor personality in the Irish Catholic tradition, and he was a man, and I love about this portrait. He was known at the time as a man who had no eccentricities, no special charisma, no particular physical distinction, so he rarely attracted any attention from journalists or cartoonists. I think he's the ultimate Prime Minister for his inability to be rendered in a comic way.
Well, looking at it, it's hard on radio, but of course his portrait, he looks like he's been interrupted in mid-sentence. His hand is half raised.
Yeah.
It's like he's going, what the?
It is the what the
it's
portrait.
It's the what the portrait for a man that was Prime Minister for only 8 days. So I can see the attraction there.
I think you'll know this chap, though, when I show you this image.
Oh, yes, that's Harry Holt.
Indeed it is. He's our 22nd Prime Minister of Australia, and this is a picture that was done by William Pidgeon, and it was painted posthumously, and that's why I wanted to show this one to our listeners if they refer to our Facebook page, because there is something rather dreamlike about this picture of Harold Holt that tends to suggest he wasn't a live sitter. Now, this is a chap that you may have come across in your time as a young boy.
I did. As a young boy, I went skin diving with Harold Holt when he was still the Treasurer, and I was underwater with him many times, and of course, ironically, that's how he died. He went down and never came up.
Well, he was actually the third PM to die in office after Lyons and Curtin. And you wonder, don't you, whether the strain of office had perhaps affected him and precipitated a suicide, or did he hitch a ride with a Chinese submarine, or did he just accept one challenge too many and did the surf crash him against a rock, drowning him while he was unconscious and dragging his body out to sea? What's your personal theory?
Oh, I think he wasn't a very good swimmer, actually, I remember, but he was extraordinary under the water. He could hold his breath for nearly 2 minutes when we were skin diving. Even as a fit 12-year-old, I couldn't do that. Couldn't get anywhere near it. I could stay underwater for about a minute. But Harold Holt used to go down and stay under for a couple of minutes.
Probably one of the other reasons he was popular with the ladies. His ability to go down and stay down.
It'd have to be more than a couple of minutes, I suspect. Let's not go there. What else have you got for me?
Oh, my favourite. And I think I see in your catalogue of photographs here a picture of Sally posing next to this particular portrait by Clifton Pugh. This, of course, is a beautiful portrait of Gough Whitlam that was painted in 1964. Pugh won 3 Archibalds, but in 1972 he won with this beautiful picture of Whitlam. It's important to note that, in fact, Whitlam refused to sit for a formal prime ministerial portrait. So this was actually acquired by the Capitol after his term of office. And I think we're very lucky to have such an incredible image of him because it just expresses such dynamic confidence. And what a man.
We're covering all bases here. We're covering your love of Gough Whitlam. We've talked about this portrait before, and we've promised to talk about the Archibald Prize every day until it's on again next year. So we're covering all bases. Actually, my own favourite Archibald Prize winning portrait was of Black Jack McEwan. We've mentioned that before,
yeah,
but that was also
too.
At Clifton Pugh the year before the Gough Whitlam portrait. I don't know where that is, but that's a great painting as well.
I think the one that you quite like was by John Russell, wasn't it? Did that win an Archibald?
The one by John Russell, was that hanging when you were in Canberra?
This is probably, for me anyway,
you've taken me by surprise because this was the most interesting portrait of the lot. For me, because this painting was of the Prime Minister that you said that Frank Ford was the shortest serving Prime Minister, or was an 8 day?
He was an 8 day.
I'm just looking through my notes here. The portrait of Gilbert, is it Gilbert?
Terence Russell, yeah, in fact, Terence, he was our 9th Prime Minister. 24th of June 1913, he defeated Andrew Fisher, who incidentally was the 6th, 8th and 10th PM.
That's right, but it was a disputed result in the ballot, of course, and Russell was sworn in as a caretaker Prime Minister, I believe, at the time.
And, of course, known as the Jugs Man.
Well, this is something that's come out since, and it's interesting to see his portrait. It was painted some 10 years after he was the Prime Minister. He was Prime Minister for 7 days.
Holy hell.
He was a devout Anglican, and he opposed the idea of Australia getting involved in the European war that was looming at the time, and he made his first and only speech as Prime Minister in his hometown of Grafton just 2 days after his swearing-in ceremony.
The picture, we must put it on Facebook, is
very,
very stoic and sort of stern and austere-looking, isn't it?
It is, and he was reportedly found in Grafton in a compromising situation with a young artist, Percy Noble. Russell was arrested after a disturbance had been reported by guests and the residents at the Excelsior Hotel in Grafton.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
He was caught with Percy in hand.
He was not only that, he was the arresting officer. These reports, some of these have only just been released. The arresting officer was an acting New South Wales sergeant, Thomas Scanlon.
Right.
And he reported that when he entered Russell's hotel suite, he witnessed the Prime Minister clad only in a brassiere and a girdle, engaging in, as he put it, an unnatural act with a young man.
But where the hell do the Jugs come into this?
Percy Noble was also arrested. He was the young artist.
Oh, okay.
Well, Russell was a corpulent man, and Scanlon is reported to have said that the size of the brassiere indicated that it obviously belonged to a woman with enormous jugs.
I thought it was a ceramic jug that it referred to.
And this became something of a joke among members of the New South Wales Police Force. But a lot of this was concealed at the time out of respect for the office of the Prime Minister. And the interesting thing about this portrait, and I know that we're going to be short on time, is that it shows a seated Russell looking very stern with his little Alfred Deakin-esque beard and a watch chain. There's a pile of papers that he has his hand on, and his index finger is pointing at the top paper, which, if you get close to the portrait, it's obvious is his letter of resignation to the Governor General.
Oh, gosh.
And then sitting on a pile of papers to the right of his arm, there is a wedding ring in a presentation box.
Oh, so he was married.
Well, this I don't know, and the significance, of the symbolism, I guess, is in here, because this painting itself, I'll talk about that in a minute, in the background there is a side table, and on that side table there is a large jug.
Oh, funny. That's a little bit of personal iconography on his way out.
Well, this painting was painted by his brother.
Gosh.
His brother painted it 10 years after he was Prime Minister and had to resign. Well, was it 10 years after he died, I think? It was painted after Gilbert Russell had died. He died in 1923, and this painting was done after that. It was not hung in the Parliament House Gallery until 1951.
Okay.
And it doesn't often come out.
Well, I only know John Russell's name because he's presently one that is an artist that's featured in at Fed Square at the moment at the NGV in the Impressionists, Australian Impressionists Abroad exhibition that's on there at the moment. He was an Impressionist, but gee, that picture is very much not in the genre of an Impressionist painter.
No, he did a lot of landscapes, but he also did some self-portraits, and this is painted in a very conservative style.
Yeah, probably something that would have been something that Gilbert Russell perhaps would have liked, I suppose.
I don't know if they got on, but the symbolism of the wedding ring and the jug. We probably should call it quits there. It's been great talking to you again, and we might even go back to Canberra again another time and have a look, but that's been fascinating.
Thanks, Will. You've certainly illuminated me today. So we've both drawn lots out of this episode of The Profound Thread.
And if you get a chance, go to Canberra, have a look at the Prime Ministerial Portraits and the National Portrait Gallery, which is not far away. That's worth seeing as well.
Don't forget to drop by and see the Jugs Man.
Well, we're going to welcome you now to the very first edition of Q&AAA.
The and three A's, Will?
I'm not sure actually if it's got two, three or four A's, but it's Q&AAA. And it's very, very good to have the Prime Minister here, Malcolm Turnbull, in his leather jacket. We'll get to you in a minute, Prime Minister, but first, would you just test your buzzer? Thank you. Thank you. That's very good. And also former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, very pleased to see you here as well. You don't have a buzzer for good reason. And Senator Mitch Fifield, who, of course, is the Minister for Communications and Minister for the Arts. And also Janet Albrechtson, who is the director or a director of the Institute of Public Affairs and a well-known political commentator. You'll all get your chance later, but first, we have Sally Bailey, who is a well-known radio presenter, superstar housewife, and she's going to be the very first guest on this very first Arts About original. Welcome, Sally.
Well, welcome, Will. Is this a surprise that you mentioned a little earlier?
It's a little surprise. We think it's a little breakthrough on community radio. But of course, it is Q&AAA, and in Q&AAA tradition, we're going to put you on the spot.
Ooh. Fantastic, okay.
So I'm going to start by asking the first question.
All right, go ahead.
You can take this as a comment.
I don't have a buzzer, does that matter?
No, you don't have a buzzer, but I have a buzzer.
Okay.
And that's all that counts in this show. And none of the other politicians, apart from the current Prime Minister, has a buzzer. But Sally, you've made the bold step into the world of politics in this last 2 weeks. Why?
Well, artists have now become involved in politics generally because we find ourselves in an intolerable situation. The government attitudes are at odds with what we know provides an enormous benefit to all Australians and the cultural life that we share. We need a committed voice for artists and audiences in Canberra. The last budget clearly demonstrated the disdain and lack of appreciation the current government holds for the arts. And if we don't get a voice in Canberra, we're not going to be heard. So the Arts Party are recognising that artistic and cultural practices are a hugely important tool that bring people together, expose them to new ideas and different ways of thinking. So I have decided to stand as a member for Dunkley, which is our local member here in the House of Representatives, to represent those ideals. Was that time up?
No, I'm sorry. That's the Prime Minister trying to interject. Your time will come up, Prime Minister. I'm sorry, we haven't got your microphone switched on. That's very good. And I guess that's laying it out for us. But I was going to ask you, also in Q&A tradition, about just how big a tool is Mark Latham? But look, instead, I know that's not your specialty. So let's go with this one. Who and what is the Arts Party that you're representing?
Well, the Arts Party are a sort of a non-political party. It's been created to broadcast the importance of the arts to all Australians and remind them we need and rely on the arts for a lot more than just our entertainment. The arts enrich and inspire and change our lives. The current government's totally failed to recognise the importance of the arts by drastically cutting all the small to medium and individual artists' funding, and it's going to be the death knell for many of them. We've got to change the current thinking that the arts play a superficial role in the economic chain in our country and wake up to the fact that it's the arts that inform, inspire and educate, teach, connect and enable us all to communicate complex ideas. They stimulate economies and create places we want to work in, live in, build businesses in and houses and school our children in. We've got to recognise that creativity is a fundamental asset of the country, and the Arts Party wants to raise that voice in Canberra.
All right. Well, I think that's said it all. And the Arts Party, how many candidates is the Arts Party fielding in this election?
There are 13 senators and 7 House of Reps. I'm the only House of Representatives in Victoria.
Okay, you're the lone candidate in Victoria for the lower
candidate.
House. Given that, do you really think that you can make a difference to the way people that perceive art as a benefit to everyone?
Well, I'm going to try. I see it as such an important part of all of our lives. I just want to stand up and try and effect some change. I've seen firsthand through my life working in the arts the major effects enacted by the work that artists can do in communities. And I think it's about reminding people that this is one of their rights, and it's being stealthily removed by men in suits in Canberra who have made an important decision about all of our lives on a very personal level. I can only use my voice and try and encourage others around me to raise theirs in unison with me. But if I can point out that these things have been decided for them and they're going to affect their lives and their children's lives so adversely, perhaps we might spread the word. And if enough of us say, no, we don't want this, the party in power might have to make a change to policy.
I wondered, Sally, whether people give any thought to the fact that...
This is a question from the floor.
Oh, okay. Then could somebody get a mic over there, too, please?
Get a mic over there, thank you.
Yes, John?
I wonder whether people think about the fact that as a community, we're often filled with pride, a sense of personal pride, when we look at the way our arts are artists and the result of their work is being perceived around the world. You know, Australians are very well known around the world as artists, and it encourages all of us to get on with our lives and feel better about ourselves. And that's surely one of the things that we need to consider when we're wondering whether or not we're going to just completely condemn art and put it into the past, or whether it's something that we're going to support financially particularly. You know, it's about the common health. It's about health in the end.
It is absolutely about health. It's about social health, mental health, community health, connectivity, all of those things. And I think that that's really interesting what you bring up, which is that just about everybody in Australia would cite pride in the achievements of artists throughout the world and throughout their communities. It's interesting. We need to unpack that and work out what that is about. Why are we proud? Why are we all proud of those things? Somehow or another, it must tap into some extremely important human qualities. It's really, it's very, very interesting. I would like to say, I would like to ask you all, actually, listeners Will and John, did you know that nearly 70% of school children actually don't have any access to musical education? And this is just the most resoundingly frightening thing that's actually happening and has been a part of this dismantling of the arts sector and the funding that goes into the arts sector. Are schools actually really being detrimentally affected by this? And I don't think that there's any educator out there who would, and parent probably, who wouldn't say that music and the arts in primary schools and in secondary schools is so profoundly important to developing cognitive skills, to enlighten, to create lateral thinking, to enhance the sort of the happiness and well-being of their children. This is something that really needs to be addressed. And, of course, this is something the Arts Party
wants. Well, we're in danger.
Well, thank you, Sally. And I'm sorry to butt in, but it looks like we've come to the end of our very first edition of Q&A. I thank John and Sally and the other contributors. And also thank you to all of our guests, many of whom were forced to remain silent during the broadcast. And we thank them for their unexpected display of grace. And I guess they've had enough time anyway to explain their position on the arts for the last 8 years.
Have a look at the Arts Party website, everybody, because that will illuminate you a little further if you're interested.
Artsparty.org, I believe it is.
That's right.
All right.
And now it's time for John On.
Thank you, Swanee. There he is, by the way, out there in the foyer being dragged off the Prime Minister by the security guards.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
Hey, Will, 1969, I'm not sure where you were. I think probably you were in Sydney, were you, in 1969, working on Cockatoo Island on the big lathes, making drive shafts for submarines. Does that sound about right?
69, I was 17 years old, and I was in a pub, a well-known pub in Melbourne, watching man land on the moon.
Oh, well, yes.
I was still at school. I was a school student.
Well, I was a teenager, a couple of years younger than that, and after school I had a job working with Stanislav Halpin, a potter.
And, oh, you mentioned him on the Arts About before.
Cleaning clay off things and listening to him talk. And I went round there one afternoon and there was a note left on the pottery door that said, "Gone to Sydney to help Christo wrap Little Bay in fabric." And I didn't know what the note was referring to.
You probably never heard of Christo at that point.
I hadn't. And but I looked it up and it started appearing in the newspapers, you know, that this fellow Christo was wrapping up Double Bay in Sydney with fabric and wire. And the images were terrific, you know, in that old sort of photo gravure way on newspapers, a bit grainy, and this beautiful bay on the New South Wales coast getting wrapped in fabric. And Christo was, of course, absolutely fascinated. What a fascinating man. He and his wife, Jean-Claude, who worked together over many years doing all sorts of quite stunning projects. I think they're stunning. I'm perhaps mentioning Christo because he worked, this is in somewhat of a contrast to your political ambitions, mm-hmm. in that Christo often made the remark that what he was doing should be seen as fun rather than political.
Yeah.
That he wasn't really sort of concerned about what people assumed to be political remarks behind his work, but... people often did nonetheless. They connected it to particularly to environmental issues over a long career. You know, they what they would do, the way that she, his wife, you know, the redhead, were constantly smoking cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Jean-Claude. Gitane, presumably.
Probably, yeah. They lived in New York.
Oh, maybe something else then.
Mm-hmm. Peter Stuyvesant,
Lucky
presumably.
Lucky strike.
But... the two of them would propose an idea, and it might be wrapping the Reichstag, or it might be putting the umbrellas up across Japan and California simultaneously, these somewhat bizarre but absolutely beautiful concepts. And then they would pre-sell the results of that work, as in drawings or photographs of the work, before they were made. And people would buy stuff. And so, in fact, they were crowdfunding well before anyone else had ever sort of come up with a concept like that. And it worked very, very well. In fact, over a long career, they amassed over $200 million in sales of drawings and photographs, all of which was spent on putting together various... coverings around the world, and all of those coverings were all done without any help from arts funding or from any sort of sponsorship or patronage. In fact, the money all came from their own sources, which is pretty fascinating stuff, I think.
It's very fascinating.
The one that
there's
like...
There's not very many, clearly, who can manage to do that.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. But it's entered my life again recently because I was talking to James McPherson about the Charlie Brown theatrical show up in Melbourne. You know, now this may seem like a stretch.
This is going to be quite a spectacular segue, I can see that now.
Yes, well, Charlie Brown up, there's a theatre show based on Peanuts on at the Alex Theatre up in Melbourne. And I remember that Charles Schulz, in one of his cartoons, had Snoopy's kennel wrapped by the Christos.
Oh, brilliant. Did you?
Yeah. And the Christos enjoyed that a lot, and they sent him a kennel, a wrapped kennel, which is now in the Charles Schulz Museum in America. Which is one of the only surviving Christo works, because most of them were dismantled after they'd been put together, but the kennel remains.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
We all have a favourite Christo. Do you have a favourite, Will?
No, I don't, because
we don't all have
a favourite.
I do. I love when Christo came to Australia, because I do remember that. You've reminded me, and it was
the cliffs.
It was exciting.
Yeah, that was incredible.
And I've seen lots of his work, and I don't always know where it is.
No.
It's the object that I'm looking at, thinking, how the hell did they do that? It's wrapped up.
And people's the folly houses of it, inside just the scale of the folly is what is so...
Yeah, the sheer uselessness.
Uselessness, but exuberance and sort of fun, that childish childhood fun.
I loved the Caribbean islands myself, as well as the Sydney one. The Caribbean islands I thought were beautiful. They had sort of skirts around all half a dozen islands.
Oh, yes, that was divine. Now, listen, we better move on, I'm afraid. Thank you for that, John.
You're welcome, Sally.
Here's a piece of music you mightn't have heard for a while. It's an instrumental Beatles track from 1961 called Cry for a Shadow. Actor, blogger, commentator and agitator Cliff Ellen is not too good today, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, so he's still home with a rotten cold, but we've got him on the phone anyway. Good morning, Cliff. How are you today?
Good morning, Sally. I'm engulfed in self-pity, I suppose, which is a plight of most males, particularly if you're ageing and you're single.
Do you think so?
But
most
not to
males.
Worry.
Yeah,
not
okay.
to worry.
You actually
know.
In bed, Cliff?
No, I was trying to write my column. I mean, I would have liked to have come down, but it's just a little bit too risky, that's all. In fact, I was on Facebook and there's a beautiful picture of my wife and children and it got quite a few nice comments, so I couldn't resist putting a little note at the bottom that that's a fine example of a first-class stallion. that's just my...
That doesn't sound self-pitying.
No, well, you got to smile. Laughter is what keeps us going, doesn't it? Particularly if you're 80, for God's sake.
That's right.
God's truth, what have I got to look at, you know? I've been watching a lot of television.
Ah, well, that's good. What
remember, remember that series, The Secret Lie?
Yes.
That was
yeah, you
Sarah
didn't say very good
or something,
things about
and
that.
She was doing that Anna Karenina a bit.
Yes, that's right.
I remember complaining about her lover. He had long hair and I thought he's a pretty ordinary actor.
Well, they didn't have very much chemistry between them, did they, those two?
No, they didn't. And strangely enough, there's a new show on Foxtel called Secret City.
Yes,
you
mentioned that last week.
And the reporter is a lady called Anne Torrey and her boyfriend is the same man.
Oh.
Sorry, I coughed. With the same long hair and equally as painful. But that's the way it goes. I mean, we've got, we've got Collingwood's political woes, Collingwood and politics, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But we've still got a few good shows. Mad as Hell's still on.
Oh, yes, I haven't seen.
Eggheads, I like Eggheads.
Yeah.
Follow the Money, a Danish SBS series. That's really well worth having a
look
at.
Oh, what's that one called, Follow the Money?
Yeah, Follow the Money's good. Yeah.
And is that on Foxtel or is that on...
No, that's on SBS.
Oh, that's good.
The
Ooh,
only trouble
I love
is
a bit of Danish TV, me.
Yeah, well, the trouble with the... What's the other one?
Yeah.
Clever Man,
yes.
I talked about that last week, didn't
you
I?
You did, and I've watched the first two episodes of it so far.
What did you think of it?
Well... I quite like it. I mean, it is a little bit crazy. I've never been much of a fan of the supernatural, but there's something about it that's getting me, and I actually think I'm going to like it as I watch more.
They do have the odd bad actors.
Everyone has the odd bad actor, don't you think?
There's a few clunky lines, and there's probably a degree of brainwashing. And the subtitles, well, whoever does the subtitles really should take lessons from SBS because they're not quite as good for... people who...
They're a bit
like
small,
it.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and which means that, I've got to get closer to the television, although I've got a big television set. Debbie Enker likes it, but of course Debbie Enker likes everything, doesn't she?
Well, she doesn't write about what she doesn't like.
Yeah. There is one other thing while I'm on television, though.
Yeah.
It's on the ABC. Would I Lie to You? Now, that's just one of those silly game shows.
Yeah.
It's got Lee Mack and David Mitchell. They're the hosts of each team, and they're very clever. It's well worth a look. It's very
really?
Funny, I think.
Okay.
But that's television.
That's
movies.
Movies.
Well, there's two at the moment. The Big Friendly Giant. But no, that's the Ron and Dahl thing. That doesn't open until July 1st. That's right. Spielberg movie.
Yep.
That looks promising. The Nice Guys, private detective set in the 70s. Russell Crowe and Ryan Crosley. That's enough of the movies. Back to the theatre. Skylight by David Hare. Now it's on the NTC with Colin Friels,
Yes.
And Anne Sampson. Well worth a look. Double Indemnities at the NTC also, but that finishes July 2nd. It got a thumbs down from the great Cameron Woodhead, who I can't stand, but still.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea of Double Indemnity. You've got to look at the film to really know what I'm talking about, I suppose. Yes.
Will and I are going to go and see Skylight in next week, I think.
I think you'll like Skylight. Colin Firth is always good, you know. Well, not always, but most times.
Often he's good.
He's got a beautiful Australian voice. That's what I like about him.
Yeah.
Alan Carr's on at Hamer Hall on the 31st of August, I think.
Yes.
But it's now on sale. I don't like Alan Carr. He's a fellow with glasses from England.
Yes, he's got a funny show, Natty Man, or is that
yeah.
right? Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
yes,
right.
Yes.
A lot of people love him. He's not my cup of tea, but, you know. That's
I didn't know he was coming out to Australia, so he's doing a one-man show, is he?
He is at Hamer Hall. Where is Hamer Hall, anyway?
It's part of the Art Centre.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I've probably been there and not known.
Yeah, I think you have. It's yeah. quite big.
I'm still waiting to get right up to Bendigo to see that Marilyn Monroe thing. Perhaps I should make it a day trip and go to Bendigo.
I don't know that it's right up your boulevard, to be honest, Cliff.
No, I'm a great fan of Marilyn Monroe.
Are you? Would you like to see lots of her dresses?
No, she didn't turn me on in that respect, sexually. No. She's just a great actress.
Yes, yes. There's a little bit of history and there's a little bit of snippets of film, but it's mostly about the things she wore.
Great train trip though, Cliff.
It is a good train trip. And Bendigo's gorgeous. And actually, it is a terrific little art gallery.
Yeah, I like Bendigo. I've sold houses in Bendigo, believe it or not.
You've sold houses? Were you a real estate agent in Bendigo?
No, but I did work in bankruptcy for a few years.
This is the role of, this is what artists do. They work across all modicums of work, all different ways of working.
Yes,
we all have to stick our fingers into different pies.
It's quite
times.
Funny to put that in, but I have, indeed. Mm. I always like going to Bendigo because I love the town. I love the architecture.
Nice it's place to foreclose.
To what, John?
To foreclose.
I was a very soft bankruptcy administrator. Right. I was always in favour of the bankrupts.
Were you?
I had a lot of trouble there.
This is what we need.
No, perhaps I'll just wait for the Scorsese thing. But then I've got to go to town. I did go to town, believe it or not, before I got sick. That's another place I recommend, the Comics Lounge, if you're interested at any time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's in Errol Street, North Melbourne. Give it a try one night. They have some good comics there.
Oh, okay.
Peter Hellyer was on last Saturday night. I recommended it to someone. They said it was great.
Mm. Really? So, okay. Oh, that's good.
What's the
Scorsese thing you're going to hang up for?
What's that?
What you said, I'm going to wait for the Scorsese thing to go to Melbourne. What was that?
The Scorsese exhibition.
I beg your pardon. Yes, okay.
I'm a great fan of his.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not surprised. There's lots of...
Yeah, this is called Performing Arts, this segment.
Right.
Can you hear me down there?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Right down there. No, that's all. Look, I've got to ride my car. I must mention, I saw on the television, I saw Walk the Line again the other night.
Honestly, with Joaquin Phoenix.
That's a terrible film. Oh. That man's terrible.
Oh, really?
He gave a sort of perverted exhibition of Johnny Cash. He upset Johnny Cash's name.
Oh, well,
yeah. Although Reese Witherspoon was fantastic.
Yes.
You tell John if I'm in desperate trouble, I always go back to Leon the Professional. All right, that's my favourite film now.
Leon the Professional.
What happened to Gorky Park?
Yeah. Gorky Park. It was really good. But Leon the Professional is a beautiful love story. I've said it before. It's just lovely. If you ever see it, John, I'll be interested in your comment.
I'll look it up. I'll see if I can't sort of drag it out of the cosmos somewhere.
Well, you never know.
What are you up to this afternoon, obviously?
I'll probably have a bit of a sleep. Bit of a sleep shortly because, it's nearly midday and...
You are sick.
Yeah.
Put your feet up.
Rest, as long as I've got to turn the phone off and turn the sound down on the mobile phone as well. It's a bit of a nuisance to have a rest. It takes you 15 minutes before you start.
You can get organised, that's right. What's your favourite song for today?
Well, something soft like Glenn Miller.
Oh.
Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Okay. I've got the Andrews Sisters.
Trouble Waters was on. That was nice, wasn't it?
I've only got the Andrews Sisters with Chattanooga Choo Choo. Sorry about that.
Well, you had to go to Trouble Waters. I like that too.
All right. Well, we've got this one. Okay. Have a good week. See you next week, Cliff.
I'll be down next week.
Bye.
Bye.
See you, Cliff.
It's time for the news.
Indeed.
Look at Will going. Look at his wrists flying.
Yeah, I'm not bad on the old keyboard.
Oh, you're on very, very good.
It's aerobic for me.
Now, as we know, on up the MPRG is Country and Western, which is the landscape show up there, and I like that.
So did Mark.
Mark Stewart liked it. Yes, I think it's right. Worth a look, and it would seem from what's in front of me here that it's off to the Ian Potter Centre. So why not see it down here before you have to go up there?
Good thinking. Very good thinking. Dark Mofo is on right now and runs until the 21st, which is not very long away, actually.
Is that the car running out the front ready to take you down there?
Yes, indeed. And the nude solstice swim.
Oh, are you going to do that?
Of course.
Oh.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Now, don't forget this afternoon, Sunday 19th of June, 3 p.m, Matthew Fagan's on it with Daniel Tocheri with their performance Solstice. That's at the St. John's Church in Flinders.
Rosebud Plaza, not something that I normally mention on the arts program.
No.
But here they are, and they're introducing a creative hub. So it's a school holidays arts activity. And I noticed that there's a banner being painted down there with Judy Singleton and Peter Ferguson.
Mm.
And they're friends of the show.
They most certainly are.
And they're very good artists, as it turns out. And that's something to be interested in, I think, if you've got kids and you want to go down there and do something with them. Wednesday the 29th. To the 2nd of July, and from 10 a.m. until midday.
Yeah,
daily.
That's right. That would be fantastic if you were between 6 and 16, yeah. Or you know someone in those ages, get them down there.
Do you know anyone that age?
I do, actually. Yeah, quite a few people. Now, tonight is the last night for Australian Horror Story. If you happen to be in Paran or in the city, you could get along to see them. This is the multi-green room award-winning team that brought you The Beautiful Losers. It's a not-so-politically correct musical horror story. Go to the Melbourne Cabaret website to find out about that. The Melbourne Cabaret Festival runs until the 26th of June, so it's got about another week in it in Paran. There's so many things to running on there. Have a look at their website. Also, go and have a look at the Arts Party website and my Facebook page. And if you think it's about time our government heard our voices and demonstrated that they understand how important the arts are to all of us and how much they contribute to our culture, our economy and our better selves, could you like it? Share it around and please help spread the word. I can't say it enough. The Arts Party, we need your voices. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, but you can catch up on the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime during the week. The show is also repeated on Wednesdays at 12. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Please join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
We do know what we like. Brody knows what he likes. Will knows what he likes.
Yeah, I reckon that was the theme from Three Corners, not Q&A.
Oh, thanks, Brody.